Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is Wednesday, the 4th of March, 2026, and we are diving into it. We are wild into it. We are doing the most, as we always do here on Pulling Heartstrings, because wow. What an amazing time it is to be alive, because how... Hey, to be you. I think most of us are going through the motions, ne? And the motions has got us in a grip. And this grip, ne, is just not letting go. The grip is holding us very, very tight. But also, March seems promising. March seems liberating. March seems to some degree, right? March is giving good evening vibes.
Good evening, the Matriarch. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you doing?
I've been doing great, eh? Oh, why are you wearing all those days?
I was sick, man.
Oh, you were sick. Recovered.
I'm not recovered, but it's fine.
Yeah, we are getting demo.
Yeah. We are getting there.
So, I speak healing in the name of Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much, and I receive it with open arms.
Okay.
So how are you doing? And how are we going to get rich, my friend?
Yeah.
How are we going to get rich, eh?
I don't know. I don't have a formula. We are just hoping manna to fall from heaven.
Because me, I'm also waiting for this manna, my dear.
I've been listening to all from all those motivational quotes, but
my dear, it's been 10 years motivational quote.
Yeah.
Hectic. Yeah. 10 years motivational quote, but we are still here, guys. I know, are we doing something wrong? Bera or oro. So you also don't have a formula to wealth, huh? But you're an economist, Moss.
Yeah, I'm an economist. You know, Moss, we are very good at managing
other people.
Other people.
Your own one, you're just running around.
Show me. So the same applies to the rest.
Even the doctor, my dear.
They cannot diagnose their own issue.
Even doctor cannot doctor themselves, my dear. Why do you think we are here? Why do you think we are here, my friend? We are here, most because whoa. But also, I wanted to ask you, did you listen to our reading corner in February?
No.
You didn't listen to our reading corner?
No, I was not acquainted myself with that one.
Why? So you don't like reading?
Yeah?
Excuse me?
Yeah? Maybe I just missed that one.
How did you miss it? I had reading corner for 6 days. I had reading corner for 6 days. The first book we did was The Alchemist. Then we did How to Kill a Mockingbird. And then the next one that we did is the Laws of Nature. Then we did a lot of books.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, I missed the most important part.
How?
Oh, yes.
My goodness. We were reading books.
I'll go back to the
podcast.
Yeah,
it was part of February's edition where we had the reading corner. So the reading corner was basically us reading. I think we also did The Anatomy of Habits. Some of our audience also gave me suggestions there in the DMs. They gave me suggestions on which books to read as well. And we read them.
How about those two? What is it?
Who's Chinua Achebe?
Things Fall Apart.
Things Fall Apart. I think so. No, I'll have to go through the list. But did you read it?
No, I was just checking the silly on it.
Okay, so you haven't read the book, Things Fall Apart.
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Chinua Achebe.
Yeah.
Okay, I see. Things Fall Apart. Okay. Things Fall Apart, we would probably need 2 days to read through it. But you have to promise that you're at least going to be in the presence as we are reading. Otherwise, it's nothing because it's your recommendation.
And how about Rich Dad Poor Dad?
Rich Dad Poor Dad. Yeah. Now you're just throwing out all the books that you have read, but
there are many in Babylon.
But then that's why you have to join the reading corner so that you can actually become enhanced. And that's why, because when we were reading, we were also talking about it. You know, we're also talking about the little things that are within the books and that we can relate to. So it's like a book club.
Fiction.
Okay.
Fiction and nonfiction, darling.
Oh, yeah.
Both. Both. As long as it's a good read.
Yeah.
As long as it's a good read, then we are reading.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you haven't been in a classroom in a long time. So the IQ is also going to just start dropping if you don't keep feeding it.
Yeah. It's like now.
So now you watch series. Eh? Chomi?
Yeah.
Chomi, now you watch series and movies.
Yeah.
No more documentaries about important stuff. Now you just lay, pop Netflix and chill. You that used to read books.
Yeah.
Even academic books. You used to watch documentaries. Now you're watching series. What happened? What happened?
I cannot see the results.
Of reading.
Yeah.
But it's stimulating. Especially to a person such as yourself, I would say that it's stimulating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it? Those ones, soccer. Fiction or non-fiction? Fiction or non-fiction? It's going to watch soccer. It's going to watch soccer.
Yeah, we are two soccer
men. You people. Okay, but then we should also read The Art of War, because if we understand the concept of The Art of War, then we can basically master and conquer anything, including football.
Yeah.
Then you guys can also bet better.
Yeah, that's
you guys can gamble better. Shashi, you guys are betting amongst. You guys can gamble better when you have learned The Art of War.
Nee.
Yeah. It's easier to estimate who's going to win in terms of understanding the players and understanding, the probabilities and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant idea. Yeah.
You people there. You people there just want to be chilling in your lives. So snared up to sir. Just singing the answer.
Having some liquors.
Beverages. Must be nice. Sutunye mboga shiri. Wow, guys. Mwakwanja nyota ningu beverages.
Yeah.
And you guys are drinking beverages.
I go back to my 2000 salary.
You went back home. Come here, we take one. Yeah, you went back home. Come here, we take one. That's strong. Not to put kutenya. Atukenyeg, natukukutenya ya kembo, kembo kana kamem.
It's cuckoo.
Eh, my dear, mori lile unemba. Kukuta. Alright, let me know who wins. Me, I'm on the team that wins.
Yeah.
Eh.
I'll let you.
Do you want Sindani?
Yeah.
Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. I am the creme de la creme, the ultimate drip, the cherry on top, the icing on the cake, the whole cake. I am the table where the cake is chilling, and I'm definitely the tiles where the table, the cake, the icing, and the cherry on top are chilling. How about that? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about that violence. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about that getting the answers so that we answer the answers, right? And one thing, okay, so we've got this thing, right? Which are on specific days, they are month ends. And now I'm thinking like, Kucha, now what is the secret to wealth? Probably somebody can tell us, what is the secret to wealth? And then also, what is the system around cash flow? Because we are supposed to be like, we're supposed to be raking in dollars. We're supposed to be raking in money. We're supposed to be, you know, rolling all over. Maracho me. The struggle is real. It is so intense that sometimes we count the pennies in the bottom, on the bottom of our bags. You know, every woman that has a bag, they knows of the surface money. The surface money is when Wakwanjarera, and you remember, Kucha, you just throw your coins in your bag. That is the surface money. The surface money, it's supposed to be on top, but it's actually under, but it's actually on top. It is what it is. So the number in studio is 0832888401. That is 0832888401. In case you would also like to call in like our previous caller and just buzz us up and also give us a little, I'm going to throw you a question and then you're going to answer to the best of your ability, and it is what it is. But in February, we had a reading corner, and the reading corner in itself was to enlighten us, to help us, and to just walk journeys with us, and also maybe enhance our imagination. You know, there are certain people that love to read and they don't have material. You know, they don't have access to libraries. They don't have that kind of access. And you're like, yeah, but why don't you just go to the library? It's absolutely free. And why not? And I'm like, yeah, because we don't have a library in our maternity. What you gonna say about that? Huh? It's because we don't have it. And, with the reading corner, it was something that, popped up, Kucha. How many of us actually want to read, but we don't have access to reading? And I decided to dedicate some of my shows to our reading corner. Now, with our reading corner, anybody is welcome to actually call in and talk about what we are reading for the evening. Everybody is welcome to come and relate. Everybody is absolutely welcome to come through and to talk about it. So today I was thinking, right? Like, the only thing that we want, today's the 4th, and we're looking at bank accounts, and we're like, ay, yay. Kwapwambela, ngotakukupwangi. Like, if I just take out the transport money of the what-what, and then it's the what-what, and then it's the what-what, papa, it's finished, eh? This one is finished, like this, you know? And I was thinking that, like, man, how do we master? How do we make, right, this business and this who we are, right, lucrative? How are we going to survive in this economy? The economy is not bad. The only problem is, okay, so for the economist, you guys can come and tell me that it's bad, because I have no idea what I'm talking about, right? But I would say the economy is not bad. Sometimes we are also just in a bind, and we are also just maybe not awakened enough to capitalize on our situation or to make real profit out of everything that we might be having, you understand? And in this, it's actually wild. It's wild, it's wild, it's wild. So I was thinking, how about on this wacky Wednesday, why don't we do the reading corner? And we are going to do the systems, not salaries. Okay? So we as Eagle Media House do not claim any ownership of the clip that we are about to play. It is strictly for reading purposes, for understanding purposes, and for discussion purposes. So please, without further ado, let us dive in to the book.
You're here because something isn't working. Maybe you earn decent money but never seem to get ahead. Maybe every time your bank balance starts to climb, something pulls it back down. Maybe you've told yourself 100 times that things will improve once you earn a little more, and then you earned more, and somehow the stress followed you up. That's not bad luck. That's not laziness. That's a system problem. And system problems don't fix themselves with harder work. They fix themselves with better design. Here's the single most important idea in this entire audiobook, and I'm giving it to you right now in the introduction so it has time to settle. A salary tells you what you earn. A system determines what you keep, what you build, and what eventually sets you free. Most people spend their entire working lives focused entirely on the first part, the salary, while completely ignoring the second. They chase raises. They switch jobs for an extra few thousand a year. They work overtime, take on side gigs, grind harder, and the result? More money coming in, same stress staying put. Because the problem was never how much came in. The problem was that nothing was waiting to receive it. This is cash flow mastery. Not a get-rich program, not a shortcut. A complete rewiring of how you think about money from the inside out. By the time we're done, you won't just manage money differently. You'll see it differently. And once you see it clearly, the old way of thinking becomes impossible to go back to. Let's start at the root. Chapter 1. Why the equation you were taught is incomplete. The financial education most people receive fits on one line. Work to earn, to spend, to repeat. That's it. That's the whole curriculum. Work hard, get paid, cover your bills, and hope that one day a raise or a promotion tips the balance in your favor. It sounds logical. It sounds responsible. For most of human history, it was enough. But here's what that equation quietly leaves out. What happens to money after it arrives? Think about that for a moment. You probably spent years learning how to earn money, school, training, building skills, climbing career ladders. But how much time did anyone spend teaching you what to do with money once it landed in your account? For most people, the answer is close to zero. And so what happens? Money arrives. Bills get paid. Whatever's left gets spent on things that feel necessary or deserved or just quietly convenient. The account empties. The cycle resets. And at no point in this process does anyone ask the most important question. Where is this money actually going, and is that where it should go? This is the gap. Not between what you earn and what you need, but between what arrives and what gets directed. Undirected money doesn't build anything. It evaporates. Not dramatically. Quietly. A subscription here. A takeout habit there. A purchase that seemed reasonable in the moment and forgotten by the following week. This isn't about judgment. It's about physics. Money, like water, follows the path of least resistance. If you don't build channels, it spreads out and disappears into the ground. Cash flow mastery begins the moment you decide to build channels. Chapter 2. The lie that keeps educated people broke. Here is the most dangerous financial belief in the modern world.
Esira shisho, but yota di kukwathere opovoro kara uasira ya kweni o chisho. Watu chithana basic mental health first aid course. Taiga njua o shari chamhongi kwa mboka ili iyo yo NHP. Watapewa unongo nonseo na kene una okutongorora o madidiriko o petameko yena cha nupiakadhi nenge o mafidakano o pama viraviro kuchane omokatiko kumekoe nenge a nironga pamwe nangoe osho otopewa unongo kene una okwea kwa sena nukwea pa ea bidhido yiri monjira omanga upya kadiboka inauru darara kuyerere o unji na kene unokara uishangitha tarira po epanja yao yo nhp.com.na epangono maradura sano odovina okurandurwa NHP rooted in care for you
your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. If you've just joined us, we're doing the Reading Corner.
Be reasonable. Earn more and everything gets easier. It's reasonable because it's partially true. More income does give you more raw material to work with. But here's what the statement leaves out. The part that trips up even smart, educated, hard-working people. Earning more without changing your structure doesn't create freedom. It creates a larger version of the same trap. Let's be precise about why. When income increases, three things typically happen in sequence. First, spending adapts. The apartment gets upgraded. The car gets replaced. The weekend habits get more expensive. Second, fixed costs lock in. What started as a lifestyle upgrade becomes a monthly obligation, rent, payments, subscriptions that now feel non-negotiable. Third, the pressure increases because now you need the higher income just to maintain what you've built. You didn't escape the treadmill. You upgraded to a faster one. This pattern has a name. Lifestyle inflation, and it is one of the most efficient freedom killers ever invented. Not because spending money is wrong, but because unintentional spending locks you into a life that requires constant performance just to stay afloat. Here's the distinction that changes everything. Income is what you receive. Cash flow is what you control. Those are not the same thing. You can have high income and terrible cash flow. You can have modest income and excellent cash flow. The difference is entirely structural. It's about what happens to money after it arrives, not about how much arrives. A salary arrives in periodic bursts. Bills arrive continuously. Mismatch alone, that timing gap between income and obligation, is the source of more financial stress than most people ever recognize. You're not struggling because you're irresponsible. You're struggling because you're managing an uneven flow with no system to smooth it out. Cash flow mastery is the art of smoothing that flow. Creating consistency where chaos used to live. Designing your finances so that the timing of money in and money out stops feeling like a monthly emergency. Chapter 3. The Foundation. You cannot command what you cannot see. Before any system can be built, one uncomfortable step has to happen first. You have to look, really look, not a rough estimate. Not a mental calculation while you're half watching TV, a clear, honest, complete picture of where your money actually goes after it hits your account. Most people avoid this, not because they're lazy, but because numbers don't negotiate. They don't soften the truth to protect your feelings. They just show reality as it is. And for most people, the reality of where their money goes is genuinely surprising. Not because they're reckless, because they've never actually tracked it with full honesty. Here's a framework to start with. For 30 days, every single dollar that leaves your account gets written down and categorized. Not to create guilt, not to restrict anything yet, just to create visibility. What you'll typically find falls into four categories: essential fixed costs, rent, mortgage, insurance, loan payments, things that are the same amount every month and non-negotiable, essential variable costs, groceries, utilities, transportation, necessary, but the amount fluctuates, non-essential fixed costs, subscriptions, memberships, services you signed up for and barely use. This category tends to be larger than most people expect. Non-essential variable costs, dining out, entertainment, impulse purchases, convenient spending. This is usually where the biggest leaks hide. Once you can see these four categories clearly, once you know the actual numbers, something shifts. The anxiety that comes from not knowing begins to dissolve. Fear, it turns out, thrives on fog. The moment you bring clarity into your finances, you take back a significant amount of power. You cannot command what you refuse to observe. This isn't optional. It's the foundation everything else gets built on. Chapter 4. Your money needs a job. Before it arrives. Here's a concept that separates people who build financial stability from people who perpetually react to their finances. Every dollar should have an assignment before it lands in your account. Think about what happens in most people's financial lives. The paycheck arrives. They pay the bills that are due. They buy what they need. They spend a little on what they want. And whatever's left, if anything is left, might get saved. Maybe. The problem with that sequence is the word left. Saving and investing from what's left over is one of the least effective financial strategies in existence, because there is almost never anything left over. Expenses expand to fill available income. It's not a character flaw. It's human nature. The solution is to reverse the sequence entirely, instead of earn to spend to save whatever remains. Design it as earn to allocate immediately to spend what remains. The moment money enters your account, it gets divided according to a pre-decided plan. A percentage goes immediately to an untouchable savings account. A percentage goes toward any debt repayment. A percentage goes toward a future investment fund. And the rest, what remains after those allocations, is your spending money. Guilt-free. No second-guessing. This is called paying yourself first, and it is one of the oldest and most consistently effective principles in personal finance. But the reason it works isn't mystical. It's mechanical. You are removing the decision from the emotional moment. You are pre-committing when you're calm, so you don't have to negotiate with yourself when you're tired, stressed, or tempted. Pre-deciding is one of the most powerful tools in cash flow mastery. You make the important decisions once, clearly, intentionally, without pressure. And then the system executes them automatically, whether or not you feel like it, on any given day. Chapter 5. Lifestyle Inflation. The High Silent Progress Killer. Let's talk about one of the most seductive traps in financial life, because it doesn't feel like a trap. It feels like reward. You get a raise, or a new job, or a better contract. The income goes up, and somewhere in your mind, A quiet permission slip gets issued. I earned this. I can upgrade now. A nicer apartment. A newer car. Better restaurants more often. Higher-end groceries. None of these things individually seem irresponsible. But collectively, they do something structurally devastating. They convert a temporary income increase into permanent monthly obligations. Once your lifestyle expands to match a higher income, you can't easily contract it. The apartment lease locks you in for a year. The car payment is fixed for 5. The habits become normal and then feel necessary. And now you don't just want the higher income, you need it. The flexibility you had before the raise is gone. This is the lifestyle inflation cycle. And it keeps millions of genuinely hard-working people permanently on the edge of financial stress despite earning more every year. Cash flow mastery offers a different question to ask when income increases. Not, what can I afford now? But, what does this income unlock structurally long-term? That reframe changes everything. Instead of converting income increases directly into lifestyle upgrades, you convert them first into structural improvements. Higher savings rate, accelerated debt payoff, increased investment allocation. You let the system grow stronger before you let the lifestyle grow more comfortable. This isn't about denying yourself enjoyment. It's about sequencing correctly. Security first, comfort second. That order produces freedom. The reverse produces pressure. Chapter 6. You don't need more money to start. You need a better rule. This may be the most important chapter in this entire audiobook for people who are currently struggling financially. Because the most common reason people delay building better financial systems is this belief. I'll set this up properly once I have more money. It sounds reasonable. It feels responsible, like you're waiting until the conditions are right. But here's what it actually is. A delay loop with no exit condition. Because once I have more money, never arrives. More money, as we've already established, tends to bring more spending, more obligations, more lifestyle, not more margin. The person who earns $30,000 and has no system will still have no system when they earn $60,000, unless they deliberately build one. Here's the truth. Structure matters more when money is tight, not less. When resources are limited, intentionality is what separates people who quietly build momentum from people who stay stuck. A person earning modest income with a clear system, knowing exactly where every dollar goes, allocating purposefully, protecting their savings before spending begins, will consistently outperform someone earning twice as much with no design. Why? Because structure compounds. Every month you operate with clarity, you make slightly better decisions. Every decision made from a place of intention rather than reaction leaves you slightly more stable. And stability, over time, creates the conditions for genuine growth. The question to stop asking, how much do I need before I can start? The question to start asking, what rule can I put in place today with exactly what I have right now? Rules don't require wealth. They require decision. And decision is free. Even one rule, every time money comes in, 10% moves to savings before anything else gets touched, repeated consistently for 12 months, creates a foundation, not a fortune. A foundation. And foundations are what everything else gets built on. Chapter 7. Saving is not enough. Understanding the difference between defense and offense. most people who are serious about money eventually arrive at the same place. They start saving. And that's genuinely good. Saving is necessary. It's foundational. If you don't have a savings habit, building one is the single most important first step you can take. A savings buffer is what stands between you and a financial crisis every time an unexpected bill arrives. But here's where the conversation usually stops, and where it needs to go further. Saving protects you from emergencies. Cash flow protects you from dependency. Those are two completely different problems, and they require two completely different solutions. Think of it this way. Saving is defensive. It builds a wall. It says, if something goes wrong, I have something to fall back on. That's essential. But a wall by itself doesn't move you forward. It just protects you from going backward. Cash flow is offensive. It builds an engine. It says, regardless of whether I show up to work today, money is moving in my direction. Income is arriving, returning, repeating, not because I traded more hours for it, but because I designed a system that generates it. Most financial advice stops at the wall. Cash flow mastery is about building the engine. Here's the practical distinction. Someone with strong savings might have 3 to 6 months of expenses set aside. That's real security. But the moment they stop working, illness, job loss, burnout, a life transition, the clock starts ticking. They're drawing down on a finite resource. The wall is there, but it's slowly eroding. Someone with even a modest cash flow system, a rental income stream, dividend-paying investments, a small business that runs without their daily presence, has a different relationship with that scenario entirely. The clock doesn't start, or it starts much more slowly, because money is still moving toward them, even when their labor isn't. The goal of cash flow mastery is to progressively reduce how much your financial survival depends on your daily effort. Not all at once, not recklessly, deliberately, one small stream at a time, one structural decision at a time, until the engine is strong enough to carry meaningful weight. This is not about becoming passive or abandoning ambition. It's about building something that works even when you can't. Because the honest truth is this, your energy has limits, your health has limits, your time has limits. A financial life that requires your constant presence to function is a financial life one bad year away from collapse. Cash flow mastery builds redundancy into your financial architecture, so that when life gets hard, as it inevitably will, the system absorbs the shock rather than you absorbing it alone. Chapter 8. The True Meaning of Leverage and Why Most People Get It Wrong. The word leverage makes a lot of people nervous. It sounds like debt. It sounds like risk. It sounds like the kind of move that ends badly on a finance documentary. But real leverage, the kind that cash flow mastery is built on, is much quieter and much safer than that. Real leverage is when one decision keeps paying you back long after the effort is finished. Here are three forms of leverage that anyone can begin building, regardless of income level. Time leverage is when systems you built in the past continue generating value today, without additional effort. An investment account you set up 2 years ago that has been automatically receiving contributions every month. A business process you systematized once that now runs without your involvement. Time you spent learning a skill that now earns you significantly more per hour than before. These are all examples of past effort creating present results. System leverage is when a process handles repetition so you don't have to. Automatic bill payments. Automatic savings transfers. Preset spending rules that make decisions for you before the emotional moment arrives. Every time a system handles a decision that used to require your attention, you reclaim mental energy. And mental energy directed toward building is far more valuable than mental energy spent managing daily chaos. Decision leverage is when one good decision compounds over time. Choosing to invest a consistent percentage of income beginning today, rather than waiting until conditions feel perfect, is an example of decision leverage. The decision is made once. The results compound for years. The initial effort is small. The long-term outcome is disproportionate. Here's the core insight. Most people try to grow income linearly by doing more. More hours, more clients, more jobs, more hustle. And there's a ceiling to that approach because there's a ceiling to human energy and human time. Cash flow mastery grows income structurally by designing systems where output is not directly tied to input, where the relationship between effort and reward gradually decouples, where doing more is replaced by designing smarter. This doesn't happen overnight. It starts small and unsexy. A small automatic investment. A side income stream that earns a few hundred dollars a month. A financial habit that runs without your daily involvement. These beginnings feel almost meaningless. But under the surface, something important is happening. Repetition is stacking. Consistency is compounding. Small systems faithfully maintained become large systems over time. That's leverage. And it's available to anyone who understands it, not just to people with capital or connections or a business degree. Chapter 9. Your nervous system is part of your financial system. This chapter might surprise you because it has nothing to do with numbers. But it might be the most important chapter in this audiobook, because without understanding this, all the strategies in the world won't fully stick. Here's something that doesn't get talked about enough in financial education. Money stress is not primarily a math problem. It is a nervous system problem. Your brain has an ancient threat detection system built into it. When that system detects danger, real or perceived, it shifts your entire cognitive functioning toward short-term survival. Long-term thinking becomes neurologically difficult. Complex planning feels overwhelming. Even decisions you know are right intellectually become hard to execute because your body is in a state of alert. Now, here's what triggers that system financially. Unpredictability. Not necessarily low income, not necessarily debt. Unpredictability. When you don't know what's coming, when bills feel like surprises, when your bank balance fluctuates wildly, when you can't predict whether you'll be okay next month, your nervous system stays activated. And an activated nervous system makes terrible long-term financial decisions. This is why so many intelligent, capable people make choices with money that they themselves don't fully understand. They're not making decisions from their best thinking. They're making decisions from a brain that's trying to reduce immediate discomfort, which often means avoidance, impulse spending, or freezing completely. The solution is not more willpower. The solution is more predictability. Cash flow mastery creates calm by smoothing money movement. When you know, with real certainty, that your bills are covered, your savings are building automatically, and your basic financial needs are handled regardless of how you feel on any given day. Your nervous system begins to relax. And a relaxed nervous system changes everything. Decisions that previously felt overwhelming become manageable. Long-term thinking, which was neurologically impossible under constant financial stress, becomes natural. The mental energy that was previously consumed by financial anxiety becomes available for something more productive. This is why building a financial system is not just a practical project. It's a well-being project. The calmer your financial life becomes, the calmer your entire life becomes. The correlation is direct and significant. Here's a practical step toward this. Identify the single most unpredictable element in your current financial life. The bill that always seems to catch you off guard, the expense that never feels covered, the area where you hold the most anxiety, and design one structural response to it. A dedicated savings buffer specifically for that expense. An automatic transfer that ensures it's covered before you spend elsewhere. One predictable response to one unpredictable problem. That single step won't fix everything, but it will signal to your nervous system that you are no longer reacting. You are designing, and that shift from reactive to intentional is where everything begins to change. Chapter 10, Time Horizons, the Hidden Variable that determines everything. Here's a question worth sitting with seriously. If nothing changed except the quality of your financial system, no raises, no windfalls, no dramatic life events, where would you realistically be in 3 years? Not 6 months? Not next year? 3 years? For most people, this question produces discomfort, because most people are operating with a 30-day financial horizon, paycheck to paycheck, bill to bill, month to month. And when your planning horizon is 30 days, your strategies are necessarily short-term. You patch problems rather than solve them. You chase relief rather than build momentum. Short-time horizons create short strategies. Short strategies produce survival, not freedom. Here's what changes when you deliberately extend your time horizon to 3 years, 5 years, a decade. First, small, consistent actions become obviously meaningful. $100 invested monthly looks insignificant at 30 days. At 3 years, it's a meaningful foundation. At 10 years, with compound growth, it's potentially life-changing. The math doesn't change. Your ability to perceive it does. Second, fluctuations stop feeling catastrophic. A bad month financially, when viewed inside a 30-day window, feels like failure. Viewed inside a 3-year window, it's a single data point in a much larger trend. The emotional weight of short-term setbacks decreases dramatically when you have a longer frame of reference. Third, decisions become cleaner. When you're operating short-term, almost every financial decision gets made under some form of pressure. When you're operating long-term, you have the luxury of patience, of waiting for the right choice rather than grabbing the available one. Cash flow mastery is fundamentally a long-term practice. It doesn't produce dramatic results in 30 days. It produces transformative results over 3 to 5 years of consistent structural design. The people who benefit most from it are the ones who can stay the course, not because they're especially disciplined, but because they understood from the beginning that the timeline was years, not months. This changes how you measure success. instead of asking, is my financial situation dramatically better this month? You ask, is my system functioning as designed? Is flow stable? Is my savings rate consistent? Are my fixed costs controlled? If the answer to those questions is yes, then you are succeeding, even in months when the balance doesn't feel impressive. Process integrity is the metric. Results follow process, not the other way around. Chapter 11, The Problem with Financial Distraction. Here is a pattern that quietly destroys more financial progress than almost any spending habit. Constantly switching strategies. A new budgeting app every few months. A different investment approach every season. A new financial philosophy every time a compelling video appears in your feed. Always researching, always adjusting, always starting over. And as a result, nothing ever gets the time it needs to compound. This is financial distraction, and it's expensive, not in dollars, but in progress. Here's why it happens. Building a financial system is unglamorous work. The early months of consistent saving and intentional spending don't produce visible results. The numbers move slowly. The changes are incremental. And in a world designed to reward immediate gratification, slow and steady progress triggers boredom. And boredom triggers the search for something more exciting. But here's what that search actually costs you. Compounding requires stillness. Not physical stillness, structural stillness, a savings account that receives consistent contributions for 5 years builds something real. A savings account that gets emptied and redirected every 8 months builds nothing. The money is the same, the behavior is different, and the outcome is completely different. Cash flow mastery demands depth over breadth. Fewer strategies, fewer accounts, fewer decisions. One clear system, maintained consistently, outperforms 10 clever strategies applied inconsistently, every single time. This is counterintuitive in a world that celebrates complexity and innovation. But the financial systems that produce lasting freedom are almost always simple. Not because simple is unsophisticated, but because simple is sustainable. Complex systems require constant attention and expertise to maintain. Simple systems run quietly in the background, tolerating human imperfection and continuing to function even during the weeks when life pulls your attention elsewhere. Strong financial systems survive distraction. Fragile ones require your constant focus. The goal is to build the former, and building the former requires resisting the pull of the new, the exciting, and the seemingly better, and instead trusting the process you've already designed. Chapter 12, What Choice Actually Feels Like. Most people think freedom means abundance. Having so much that options are unlimited, a number so large that nothing is off limits. But that's not what financial freedom actually feels like for the vast majority of people who reach it. Real financial freedom feels like the ability to pause. To pause before accepting a job you don't want. To pause before making a decision under pressure. To pause before saying yes to something that doesn't align with what you actually want your life to look like. That pause, that moment of genuine choice rather than forced compliance, requires one thing above all else, margin. Margin between your income and your obligations. Margin between what comes in and what must go out. Margin that gives you room to breathe, to think, to wait for the right answer, rather than grabbing the available one. For most people living paycheck to paycheck, that margin is essentially zero. Every decision carries the full weight of survival. You can't turn down the overtime because you need it. You can't leave the job that's making you miserable because you can't afford the gap. You can't take the risk on something meaningful because there's no buffer to catch you if it doesn't work immediately. Cash flow mastery widens that margin, deliberately, structurally, not all at once, but consistently over time, creating more and more distance between your income and your obligations, until the decisions in your life stop being made from desperation and start being made from genuine preference. That shift from desperation to preference is the real definition of financial freedom, not a number, not a net worth milestone, the quiet, grounded ability to choose. Chapter 13, The Discipline Myth, Why Willpower is the Wrong Foundation. Let's dismantle one of the most damaging ideas in personal finance, the idea that financial success is fundamentally about discipline, that if you just had more willpower, more self-control, more ability to resist temptation, everything would fall into place, that the reason you're not where you want to be financially is a character issue, not a design issue. This belief is not only wrong, it's actively harmful, because it directs your energy toward the wrong target. Here's the truth about willpower that psychology has established clearly. Willpower is a finite resource. It depletes throughout the day. It weakens under stress. It fails consistently under emotional pressure. Every person alive, regardless of how disciplined they appear from the outside, has a threshold beyond which their self-control breaks down. If your financial system depends on willpower to function, it will fail. Not sometimes. Eventually, reliably, predictably, it will fail. Because willpower always fails eventually. That's not weakness. That's biology. The solution is not to become more disciplined. The solution is to need less discipline. This is the design principle at the heart of cash flow mastery. Instead of relying on daily decisions made under varying conditions of stress, fatigue, and temptation, you make important decisions once, clearly, calmly, intentionally, and then build a system that executes those decisions automatically. Consider the difference between these two approaches to saving. Approach A. At the end of each month, you look at what's left in your account and decide how much to transfer to savings. Some months, you save well. Some months, expenses were high or mood was low and nothing gets saved. The outcome depends entirely on circumstances and emotional state. Approach B. On the day your income arrives, an automatic transfer moves a fixed percentage to a separate savings account before you touch anything else, every month, regardless of mood, stress level, or how the previous week went. The decision was made once, months ago, when you were calm and intentional. The system executes it without requiring your ongoing involvement. The person using approach B doesn't need more discipline than the person using approach A. They need less because their system handles what willpower used to have to manage. Automation is not laziness. It is respect for human reality. You will have hard weeks. You will get tired. Life will pull your attention away from your finances for months at a time. A well-designed system survives all of that. A willpower-dependent system does not. This is one of the most liberating reframes in all of personal finance. You are not trying to become a more disciplined person. You are trying to build a system that works regardless of how disciplined you feel on any given day. The system must survive you. That's the design standard. Chapter 14, Identity and Money, the hidden relationship that controls everything. There is a layer beneath all the strategies, systems, and structures that most financial education never reaches. Your relationship with money is shaped by who you believe you are, not who you want to be, not who you're trying to become, who you currently, at a deep level, believe yourself to be. If somewhere in your mind, formed through childhood observation, family patterns, cultural messages, or years of personal experience, you hold the belief that you are someone who is bad with money, that belief will systematically undermine every strategy you try to implement. Not through dramatic failure, through quiet sabotage, a missed transfer here, a rationalized purchase there, a system built carefully and then slowly abandoned without quite knowing why. This is not psychology in the abstract. It is the most practical financial obstacle most people face. Here's how it typically works. You read something compelling about financial systems. You feel genuinely motivated. You set up the structure, the automatic transfers, the spending categories, the clear allocation plan. For the first few weeks, it works. Then something disrupts it, an unexpected expense, a stressful month, a moment of weakness. And instead of treating it as a minor system correction, something deeper interprets it as confirmation. See? This is who you are. This is what always happens. And the system quietly gets abandoned. The solution is not more motivation. The solution is identity work alongside structural work. This means deliberately and consciously building a new self-concept around money, not through affirmations or wishful thinking, but through evidence. Every small financial commitment kept becomes evidence of a new identity. Every automatic transfer that runs as designed, every month you track your spending with honesty, every time you choose structural integrity over impulse. These are votes for a new belief about who you are. Psychologists call this process identity-based habit formation. James Clear, in his work on behavior change, frames it precisely. Every action is a vote for the type of person you want to become. You are not trying to achieve a financial outcome. You are trying to become someone for whom that outcome is the natural result of who they are. The practical application is straightforward. Stop measuring success only by financial results. Start measuring it by behavioral consistency. Did your system run as designed this month? Did you make intentional decisions more often than reactive ones? Did you review your finances with honesty rather than avoidance? Those behaviors, maintained consistently, produce a new identity. And that identity, I am someone who manages money with intention, becomes the most durable financial system you will ever build. Because unlike apps or strategies or external structures, identity goes everywhere you go. It operates in every context. It makes decisions for you before the conscious mind even engages. Systems manage money. Identity protects systems. Both are necessary. Most people only work on one. Chapter 15, The Attention Economy of Personal Finance. Here is a question that rarely gets asked but deserves serious consideration. How much of your mental energy does your financial life currently consume? Not the time you spend actively managing money, the background noise, the low-level worry that runs beneath ordinary daily activities, the half-formed anxiety about whether a payment will clear, whether the balance will hold, whether something unexpected will arrive before the next paycheck does. For people living without financial structure, that background noise is constant. It doesn't always reach the level of conscious worry, but it's there, quietly consuming cognitive bandwidth that could otherwise go toward creative thinking, meaningful relationships, focused work, or simple presence in daily life. Financial stress is not just emotionally painful, it is cognitively expensive. Research from Princeton economist Sendhil Mulanathan and Harvard psychologist Eldar Shafir, captured in their book Scarcity, demonstrate this clearly. Financial worry, specifically the mental load of managing tight resources, occupies significant cognitive bandwidth. Their studies found that people under financial stress performed measurably worse on cognitive tests, not because they were less intelligent, because significant mental processing power was already allocated to financial preoccupation. This has a direct implication for cash flow mastery. Building financial structure is not just about money. It is about reclaiming your mind. Every system you put in place that reduces a financial decision, automatic savings, preset spending rules, a clear monthly allocation plan, returns a portion of that cognitive bandwidth to you. Collectively, across a well-designed financial life, the mental energy reclaimed is substantial, and that reclaimed energy compounds in unexpected ways. The person who no longer spends background mental energy worrying about whether bills will clear thinks more clearly at work, engages more fully in relationships, has more creative capacity available, makes better decisions across every domain of life, not just financial ones. Cash flow mastery is, in this sense, a cognitive investment as much as a financial one. You are not just building a better money system. You are buying back your own attention. And attention, directed well, is the foundation of almost every meaningful outcome in life. The practical takeaway is this. When you evaluate a financial decision or system, don't only ask whether it makes financial sense. Ask whether it increases or decreases the mental load your finances place on you. A slightly less optimal strategy that requires minimal ongoing attention will almost always outperform a highly optimized strategy that demands constant management, because the simpler one preserves the cognitive resources needed to sustain it. Chapter 16, Building Buffers, the Infrastructure of Financial Calm. If there is one structural element that produces the most immediate and significant reduction in financial stress, it is this, a dedicated buffer account. Not your primary savings, not your investment fund, a separate, specific, clearly purposed account whose only job is to stand between you and chaos. Here's the problem it solves. Most financial stress doesn't come from catastrophic events, job loss, medical emergencies, major unexpected crises. Most financial stress comes from the predictably unpredictable, the car repair that wasn't budgeted for, the dental bill that arrived unexpectedly, the home appliance that failed, the irregular annual expense that somehow always catches you off guard. These events are not truly unexpected. Cars require maintenance. Dental work happens. Appliances break. Annual expenses recur annually by definition. What makes them feel unexpected is that most financial systems are designed only for the predictable and regular. Monthly bills, recurring subscriptions, fixed costs, and have no designated space for the irregular and certain. A buffer account is the designated space for the irregular and certain. The practical implementation is simple. Identify the categories of expense in your life that are irregular but predictable. Car maintenance, medical copays, home repairs, annual memberships, seasonal expenses. Estimate the annual total across all those categories. Divide by 12. That monthly amount becomes an automatic transfer to your buffer account. When the car needs repairs, you don't react with stress. You access the buffer. When the dental bill arrives, you don't scramble. The buffer handles it. The event that used to feel like a financial emergency becomes a non-event because you anticipated it structurally. The psychological effect of this is difficult to overstate. The experience of financial life changes fundamentally when surprises stop being emergencies. Your nervous system recalibrates. The background anxiety that accompanied every unexpected expense begins to dissolve. You develop, over time, a quiet confidence that your system can handle what life sends. Because you have designed it to do exactly that. Buffers are not a luxury for people who already have money. They are a foundational tool for people who are trying to build stability. Starting small, even $20 or $30 a month into a dedicated account, begins the structural shift. The amount matters less than the system. The system signals to your brain, I have anticipated this, I am prepared, and preparation, felt at a deep level, changes how you move through financial life entirely. Chapter 17. Debt as a System Problem. Rethinking What You Owe. Debt is one of the most emotionally charged subjects in personal finance. It carries shame for many people. It feels like evidence of failure, of decisions made poorly, of a life that got ahead of itself. That emotional weight makes debt harder to address, not easier, because shame tends to produce avoidance rather than action. So let's remove the emotion from this for a moment and look at it structurally. Debt is a cash flow problem. Specifically, it is a commitment of future income. Money you haven't earned yet that is already spoken for. Every debt payment you make is income from your future self, redirected to cover decisions made in the past. The more debt you carry, the more of your future income is already allocated before it arrives. This is why debt reduction is fundamentally a cash flow strategy, not just a moral or emotional one. Eliminating a debt payment doesn't just remove a bill. It returns a portion of your future income to your own control. Every payment eliminated is future cash flow reclaimed. The most effective structural approach to debt reduction combines two principles. First, stop the bleeding. Before aggressively paying down existing debt, ensure your system is designed to prevent new debt accumulation. This means your spending allocation must cover your genuine needs within your current income. If it doesn't, if you are regularly spending more than you earn and covering the gap with credit, debt reduction is treating a symptom while the underlying cause continues. Fix the inflow-outflow balance first. Second, create a clear elimination sequence. List every debt with its balance, interest rate, and minimum payment. Then choose a payoff strategy and commit to it consistently. The two most widely used approaches are the avalanche method, paying minimums on all debts while directing extra payments toward the highest interest rate first, which minimizes total interest paid, and the snowball method, paying minimums on all debts while directing extra payments toward the smallest balance first, which creates faster psychological wins and builds momentum. Neither is universally superior. The best method is the one you will actually maintain. For people who need motivational momentum, the snowball often produces better real-world results, even if the math slightly favors the avalanche. A slightly suboptimal strategy, executed consistently, outperforms an optimal strategy abandoned. What matters most is treating debt elimination as a structural priority, an automatic, non-negotiable allocation in your monthly system, rather than something you address with whatever is left over after other spending. Debt paid from leftovers gets paid slowly, inconsistently, and with significant interest cost. Debt paid as a structural first priority gets eliminated deliberately and efficiently. Every debt you eliminate is a permanent increase in your monthly cash flow. That money, previously committed to the past, is now available for the future, for savings, for investment, for building the engine. The math compounds powerfully once debt begins to clear. Chapter 18, The Psychology of Enough. Why more is never the answer. You think it is. There is a question that sits at the center of almost every financial struggle, and it almost never gets asked directly. How much is enough? Not enough to survive, not enough to be comfortable, enough. The number, or the feeling, at which you could genuinely say, this is sufficient. This supports the life I actually want. This is where I can stop chasing and start building. Most people never answer this question, not because they've thought about it and couldn't find the answer, but because they've never seriously asked it. The cultural default is always more. More income, more savings, more net worth, more options. More is automatically assumed to be better, and the finish line perpetually retreats as you approach it. This is not ambition. This is a treadmill. And it produces a very specific kind of exhaustion, the exhaustion of people who are achieving by every external measure and still feel like they're falling behind. Here's what the research on money and well-being consistently shows. Beyond a certain threshold of financial security, additional income produces diminishing returns on life satisfaction. The gap between struggling financially and having basic needs reliably covered is enormous in terms of well-being. The gap between comfortable and wealthy is much smaller than most people expect. And beyond genuine security, the relationship between money and happiness becomes largely a function of how money is used, not how much of it there is. The practical implication is significant. If you are spending your life optimizing for a number that keeps moving, if enough always means more than what you currently have, you are not building toward freedom. You are running in place on a very expensive treadmill. Cash flow mastery asks you to define enough, personally, specifically, honestly, not socially, not comparatively, not based on what your peers appear to have or what advertising tells you that you deserve, based on a genuine examination of what your life actually requires to feel supported, meaningful, and calm. This exercise, done honestly, produces two things. First, a target, a real number that represents genuine sufficiency rather than perpetual aspiration. Second, and more importantly, a filter. Once you know what enough looks like for you, every financial decision can be evaluated against it. Does this bring me closer to that definition of sufficiency, or does it move the goalposts further away? That filter eliminates an enormous amount of financial noise. It makes decisions cleaner. It protects you from the lifestyle inflation cycle. It allows you to recognize when you've arrived, rather than running past the finish line without noticing. Defining enough is not settling. It is precision. It is the difference between a life designed around genuine satisfaction and a life designed around perpetual acquisition. One produces calm. The other produces a very well-furnished anxiety. Chapter 19. Long-Term Thinking as a Skill. How to Train Your Brain to See Further. Here is something most financial education treats as a personality trait rather than a learnable skill. Long-term thinking. The ability to delay gratification, to make decisions based on future outcomes rather than present feelings, to stay the course when short-term results are invisible. This is typically described as something some people have and others don't. A temperament, a character feature, something you either possess naturally or struggle without. That framing is wrong, and it's holding a lot of people back. Long-term thinking is a skill. It can be trained. It can be built through deliberate practice, and understanding how to develop it is one of the most leveraged investments you can make in your financial future. Here's how it works practically. Step 1. Make future outcomes visible. The human brain is wired to respond to immediate, concrete sensory information. Abstract future scenarios. I'll have more financial security in 5 years. Activate less motivational response than present, tangible realities. To train long-term thinking, you need to make the future more concrete and present. One effective method. Use a compound interest calculator to visualize exactly what consistent monthly investment produces over 10, 20, 30 years. Not approximately, specifically. Plug in your actual numbers. See the actual figure. Make the future outcome as real and tangible as possible. When you can see, concretely, specifically, what your monthly system produces over time, the present sacrifice stops feeling like deprivation and starts feeling like investment. The future becomes real enough to motivate present behavior. This is not motivational psychology. It is neurological reality. The brain responds to vivid, specific future scenarios far more powerfully than to vague aspirations. Step 2. Create external accountability structures. Long-term thinking is harder to maintain in isolation. When only you are aware of your financial commitments, the mental negotiation that leads to abandoning them happens entirely inside your own head, with no external check. Creating external accountability, a trusted friend who knows your financial goals, a financial tracking system you review regularly, written commitments you revisit monthly, introduces friction into the abandonment process. It is much easier to quietly adjust a commitment no one else knows about than to adjust one you've stated out loud or recorded in writing. External structures don't eliminate temptation. They raise the psychological cost of yielding to it. Step 3. Track process metrics, not just outcome metrics. One of the primary reasons people abandon long-term financial strategies is that they measure success by outcomes. by how much the account has grown, by how the investments are performing, by how dramatically different life feels. And in the early months and years of building a cash flow system, outcome metrics are underwhelming. Growth is slow. Changes feel invisible. The gap between where you are and where you want to be feels vast. This produces discouragement, and discouragement produces abandonment. The solution is to shift your primary success metric from outcomes to process. Did your system run as designed this month? Did you maintain your savings allocation? Did you avoid taking on new debt? Did you make more intentional financial decisions than reactive ones? These are process metrics. And unlike outcome metrics, which respond slowly to behavior, process metrics respond immediately. Every month your system functions as designed is a successful month. Regardless of what the market did, regardless of how the numbers moved, regardless of how far the ultimate goal still feels. Train yourself to celebrate process. Results will follow, but they follow on a timeline that requires patience. Patience, applied to a sound process, is not passive. It is active trust in compounding. And compounding always delivers to those who can wait without abandoning the system. Chapter 20, Spending Identity, Why You Buy What You Buy. Let's go somewhere uncomfortable for a moment. Most people, when asked why they spend money on certain things, will give practical answers. It was necessary. It was a good deal. I needed it. It made sense at the time. But beneath the practical explanation, there is almost always a deeper layer. Spending is rarely just transactional. It is expressive. The things people spend money on communicate something to themselves and to others about who they are, where they've arrived, what they deserve, how they want to be perceived. This is not a criticism. It is human nature. Humans are deeply social creatures. Status, belonging, and self-concept are fundamental psychological needs, and consumer culture has become extraordinarily sophisticated at attaching products and experiences to those needs. The problem is not that spending carries meaning. The problem is when that meaning-making happens unconsciously, when you are spending to manage emotions, signal status, or fill psychological gaps without recognizing that's what's happening. Because unconscious spending is spending that cannot be evaluated rationally. It bypasses your financial system entirely, and it can absorb enormous amounts of income without ever producing the satisfaction it promises. Here are the most common forms of unconscious spending and what they're actually addressing. Stress relief spending. The pattern of spending that intensifies after difficult days, difficult weeks, or difficult seasons of life. The purchase feels deserved, a reward for endurance. And in the short term, it often works. There is a genuine mood lift, but the relief is temporary, the expense is real, and the underlying stress is unchanged. Status, signaling spending, purchases made primarily to communicate arrival, success, or social standing to others or to yourself. A car that exceeds transportation needs, clothing that exceeds practical requirements, dining experiences chosen for their impressiveness rather than their enjoyment. The ROI on status signaling is almost always negative when evaluated honestly, because status is relative and therefore insatiable. There is always a higher signal available, comfort spending. Purchases that reduce friction, increase convenience, or soften discomfort, often justified as productivity or self-care. These occupy a gray area. Some comfort spending is genuinely valuable, but comfort spending that quietly expands to fill available income without conscious evaluation becomes a significant leak. Identity reinforcement spending. Purchases that confirm a self-narrative. The aspiring professional who buys equipment for a business not yet started. The person who identifies as healthy and buys fitness products rather than building fitness habits. The accumulation of tools, resources, and materials that represent an identity without requiring the behavior that would actually produce it. Cash flow. Mastery does not require eliminating the emotional dimension of spending. That would be both impossible and unnecessarily austere. What it requires is bringing that dimension into consciousness, recognizing when a purchase is primarily practical, when it is primarily emotional, and making intentional decisions in both cases. A practical tool for this: before any non-essential purchase above a set threshold, say $50, apply a simple two-question filter. Question 1, what practical need does this serve? Question 2, what emotional need is this also addressing? Answering both questions honestly before the purchase does not automatically prevent the spending, but it transforms the decision from unconscious to intentional. And intentional spending, even when it chooses the same outcome, produces a fundamentally different relationship with money, one based on clarity rather than compulsion. Over time, this practice produces a significant shift in spending patterns, not through restriction, but through awareness. You stop spending on things that don't actually satisfy the needs they promise to address. You start spending more deliberately on things that genuinely do. And the total expenditure often decreases, not because you're denying yourself, but because you're choosing more accurately. Chapter 21, Building Multiple Streams, The Architecture of Real Security. The phrase multiple income streams has become something of a cliché in financial content. It often gets presented as a lifestyle aspiration. The entrepreneur with 10 different revenue sources, the investor living off dividends, the person who has somehow engineered a life where money arrives from everywhere without effort. That framing makes multiple income streams feel like a destination for people who have already arrived, a feature of financial success rather than a tool for building it. That is exactly backwards. Multiple income streams are most important, most urgently needed, for people with the least financial security. Here's why. If your entire financial life depends on a single source of income, one job, one employer, one client, you are operating with maximum concentration risk. Every threat to that single source is an existential threat to your entire financial system. Job loss, illness, company downsizing, industry disruption. Any of these events doesn't just reduce your income. It eliminates it entirely. Diversification of income is not a luxury. It is a structural safety requirement. Now, this doesn't mean everyone needs 10 income streams. It means that building even one additional modest source of income beyond your primary employment meaningfully reduces your financial vulnerability. The second stream doesn't need to replace your primary income. It just needs to exist, to provide some flow that continues even if the primary source is disrupted. Here's a framework for thinking about income diversification at different stages. Stage 1, primary income stabilized. Your main source of income is reliable. Your expenses are covered. Your saving system is running. At this stage, the priority is ensuring the primary source is as stable as possible. Marketable skills maintained, professional relationships cultivated, emergency fund built to cover 3 to 6 months of expenses if the primary income stops. Stage 2. First additional stream. This does not need to be a business. It does not need to be passive. It can be a skill-based service offered outside primary employment. Consulting, tutoring, freelance work in your area of expertise. The goal at this stage is simply to create the habit and the infrastructure of income that doesn't come from one source. Even a few $100 a month from a second stream changes the psychological and structural reality of your financial life. Stage 3. Semi-passive streams. As the first additional stream becomes established, the focus shifts toward income that requires less ongoing time input. Content that generates revenue over time, investments that produce dividends or returns, a small business with systems that reduce owner dependence. These streams develop slowly. They require upfront investment of time, money, or both. But over time, they shift the ratio between your effort and your income. Stage 4. System-driven income. At this stage, a meaningful portion of income arrives from systems rather than direct labor. This is what financial educators mean when they talk about passive income. Not truly effort-free, but structurally decoupled from your daily presence. The work was done up front. The system generates returns ongoing. Most people reading this are at stage 1 or between stage 1 and 2. That is exactly the right place to start. Not by building a complex empire, but by stabilizing the primary source, building the emergency buffer, and taking one deliberate step toward a first additional stream. The architecture of real security is not one large pillar. It is several smaller ones distributed so that no single disruption brings the whole structure down. Chapter 22. The Maintenance Mindset. How to Keep Systems Running Without Obsession. There is a failure mode on each end of the financial attention spectrum, and both of them quietly destroy what you've built. On one end, neglect. You build a system, set it up carefully, and then essentially forget about it. Months pass. Years pass. The automatic transfers run, which is good, but the underlying structure slowly drifts out of alignment. Income changes, but allocations don't adjust. Fixed costs quietly creep upward through gradual subscription accumulation. Investment allocations that made sense at 28 need review at 35. The system that was well designed at the start becomes misaligned with current reality. But because it's running automatically, the misalignment is invisible until it becomes significant. On the other end, obsession. You check your accounts daily. You analyze every transaction. You optimize and re-optimize constantly, adjusting allocation percentages, researching new strategies, restructuring accounts in pursuit of marginal improvements. This approach feels productive. It doesn't produce better outcomes. It produces anxiety, decision fatigue, and the constant unsettling sensation that you should be doing something differently. Cash flow mastery lives in the deliberate middle ground, periodic, intentional, structured review, followed by confident release. Here is a practical maintenance schedule that serves most people well. Weekly, a 5-minute balance check, not analysis. Just a quick scan to ensure nothing unexpected has occurred. An unusual charge, an overdraft, a payment that didn't process correctly. This takes almost no time and catches problems before they compound. Monthly, a 30-minute review. Compare actual spending against your allocation plan. Identify any categories that ran over and understand why. Check that all automatic systems ran as designed. Note anything that needs adjustment. Make any necessary changes. Then close the review and move on. Quarterly, a deeper review. Look at the bigger picture. Are your savings growing at the rate your plan requires? Is your debt reduction on track? Have any life changes occurred that should prompt structural adjustments? Income change? Major new expense? Significant life event? This is also the time to review subscriptions and recurring costs, which have a strong tendency to accumulate quietly over time. Annually, a full financial review. Evaluate your overall trajectory against your long-term goals. Review insurance coverage, investment allocations, and estate planning basics. Assess whether your definition of enough has shifted. Adjust the overall system architecture as needed. This schedule requires perhaps 2 to 3 hours of total attention per month. In exchange, it keeps your system aligned with your reality, catches drift before it becomes damage, and provides the ongoing visibility that keeps financial anxiety low. The goal of maintenance is not to control everything. It is to ensure the system continues to serve you, rather than drifting silently in a direction that no longer aligns with where you're going. A well-maintained financial system, reviewed on this schedule, produces something surprisingly powerful over time. Confidence without constant attention. You know your system is working because you check it regularly and it consistently is. That knowledge frees your mind from background financial worry. And as we established in an earlier chapter, that freed cognitive bandwidth compounds across every area of your life. Chapter 23, From Salary Thinking to System Thinking. The Complete Mental Shift. We've covered a lot of ground together, and if you've stayed with me this far, you've already begun a transformation that most people never complete. Not because they can't, but because they never start. Before we move toward the conclusion of this journey, I want to bring everything into focus around one central shift. Because everything we've discussed, every principle, every strategy, every structural recommendation, is ultimately in service of a single cognitive transition, the shift from salary thinking to system thinking. Let me show you what that actually looks like in practice. Salary thinking asks, how much do I make? System thinking asks, what happens automatically after money arrives? Salary thinking says, I need to earn more to feel secure. System thinking says, I need to reduce what I need in order to feel secure. Salary thinking measures success by how much came in this month. System thinking measures success by how well the system functioned this month. Salary thinking reacts to money emotionally. Relief when there's enough, panic when there's not. System thinking relates to money mechanically. The system either worked or it needs adjustment. Salary thinking depends on continuous effort, constant performance, presence, willpower. System thinking depends on structures that function regardless of mood, energy, or circumstances. This is not semantic difference. This is the difference between financial exhaustion and financial calm. Between a life that requires your constant attention to survive and a life that has infrastructure supporting it. And here's what happens once that shift is complete. Once system thinking becomes your default cognitive mode rather than something you have to consciously remember, financial decisions become dramatically simpler. Not because the decisions themselves are easier, but because you have a clear filter. Every financial choice gets evaluated against one question. Does this strengthen my system or introduce fragility? A job offer that pays more but destabilizes your schedule and mental health? System thinking recognizes that as fragility introduction, even if salary thinking sees it as opportunity, a purchase that feels justified in the moment but increases fixed monthly costs? System thinking sees the structural cost that salary thinking misses, an investment opportunity that promises high returns but requires constant monitoring? System thinking weighs the attention cost against the financial benefit and often declines what salary thinking would chase. The filter dramatically reduces decision fatigue, and reduced decision fatigue means better long-term outcomes because you're not making important financial choices under cognitive load, emotional pressure, or exhaustion. This is the gift of system thinking. Not that life becomes perfect, but that financial life becomes manageable, predictable, and increasingly aligned with what you actually want your life to look like. Chapter 24, The Compounding of Calm. What happens after year 3? There is a timeline to financial transformation that nobody talks about honestly. The first 3 months of building a cash flow system feel effortful. You are actively building new habits, resisting old patterns, making deliberate choices that don't yet feel automatic. Progress exists, but is not yet visible in your overall financial position. Months 4 through 12 feel inconsistent. Some months the system runs perfectly, other months life disrupts it, and you have to rebuild momentum. You start seeing modest results. The emergency fund is growing, debt is decreasing, spending is more intentional, but the overall picture still feels fragile. Year 2 is where things begin to stabilize. The system is no longer new. Habits have formed. Automatic transfers run without your involvement. The monthly review becomes quick because the system is mostly functioning. Results become more visible. Stress decreases noticeably. Year 3 is where something shifts fundamentally. By year 3 of maintaining a well-designed cash flow system, something happens that is difficult to describe to someone who hasn't experienced it. Money stops being loud. It stops interrupting your thoughts. It stops generating background anxiety. Not because you've reached some particular number or achieved financial independence, but because the system has proven itself reliable over enough months that your nervous system finally believes it. This is the compounding of calm. The financial benefits compound, yes. Savings grow, investments appreciate, debt decreases. But the psychological and cognitive benefits compound at least as powerfully. The mental energy that was previously consumed by financial worry becomes available for everything else. Decision quality improves across your entire life. Not just financial decisions, because you're making them from a place of stability rather than stress. relationships improve, because financial stress is one of the primary sources of interpersonal conflict. And when that stress decreases, space opens for actual connection rather than tension management. Health often improves because chronic financial stress produces measurable physiological effects. And when that stress lifts, the body can move out of prolonged defensive states. Career decisions become clearer because you're no longer making them from desperation. You can evaluate opportunities based on genuine fit rather than immediate financial need. This is what cash flow mastery actually produces. Not wealth in the traditional sense, though wealth often follows, but a life where money has moved from the center to the background, where it serves rather than dominates, where it supports the life you want rather than dictating the life you're forced to accept. And all of this comes not from dramatic intervention, not from windfalls or luck, but from 3 years of a system functioning consistently, boring, deliberate, unsexy consistency. That's the timeline. Most people never make it to year three because they're measuring success by dramatic short-term results rather than by process integrity. They abandon systems that are working perfectly simply because the results don't feel impressive quickly enough. If you can make it to year three, if you can maintain process integrity through the early months when results are invisible, through the middle period when progress is modest, through the moments when abandoning the system feels tempting, you reach a threshold where the system becomes self-reinforcing. At that point, maintaining it requires less effort than abandoning it would. The structure has become identity, and identity level change is the only kind that lasts permanently. Chapter 25, Teaching the System, Legacy Beyond Money. At some point, if you successfully build a cash flow system that produces calm in your own life, someone will notice, not because you announce it, not because you perform financial success, but because calm is visible. The absence of background financial stress changes how you move through the world. People notice, even if they can't articulate exactly what they're noticing. And when they notice, they'll ask questions, sometimes directly, "How are you so calm about money?" Sometimes indirectly, "You always seem like you have things figured out." When that happens, you have an opportunity most people never consider. The opportunity to pass on what you've learned, not as information, but as demonstration. Here's what I mean by that. If you have children, they are learning their financial patterns from you right now, not from what you tell them, but from what they observe. They're watching how you talk about money, whether it's a source of stress or a neutral tool, whether financial decisions produce anxiety or calm deliberation, whether unexpected expenses trigger panic or get handled systematically. Those observations are forming their baseline expectations about what adult financial life looks like. If they grow up watching financial chaos, chaos will feel normal to them. If they grow up watching financial systems function reliably, that will become their normal. You don't have to explicitly teach them cash flow mastery. You just have to live it visibly. The same principle applies to partners, close friends, family members. Demonstrating a better way, through your own stability, through the calm your system produces, through the choices it makes possible, is often more persuasive than any explanation could be. When people see real results, not aspirational content, but actual lived stability, they become genuinely curious about the underlying structure. And at that point, sharing what you've learned becomes natural rather than preachy. Here's what to share when someone genuinely asks. Start with the foundation. The concept that money needs direction, not just arrival. That tracking creates visibility, and visibility creates power. That systems reduce the need for discipline rather than requiring more of it. Share the practical basics. Automatic allocation. The buffer account. The maintenance schedule. The distinction between income and cash flow. These are transferable regardless of someone's current income level or financial situation. But most importantly, share the timeline. Be honest that this is not a quick fix, that the first months are effortful, that visible results take time, that the real transformation happens around year 2 to 3, not week 2 to 3. That honesty, that realistic expectation setting, is one of the most valuable things you can offer. Because most people abandon financial systems not because the systems don't work, but because they expected faster results and interpreted slow progress as failure. If you can help one person avoid that misinterpretation, you've potentially changed their entire financial trajectory. Not by giving them money, by giving them a framework that works regardless of income level. That is legacy, not inheritance, not leaving money behind. Teaching a way of thinking that produces calm, and that calm, once experienced, gets passed forward naturally. Chapter 26, The Freedom Paradox, Why Structure Creates Liberation. We're near the end now, and I want to address something that might have felt contradictory as we've moved through this material. On one hand, cash flow mastery is about structure, systems, rules, discipline, design. All of these words can feel restrictive. Controlling, the opposite of freedom. On the other hand, I've been claiming that these things produce freedom, real, experienced, day-to-day freedom. How can both be true? This is the freedom paradox, and understanding it is essential to sustaining what you've built. Freedom is not the absence of constraints. Freedom is constraints that you've chosen intentionally. Think about it this way. A person with no financial structure, spending freely, making decisions emotionally, reacting to whatever life presents, might appear free. But they are not experiencing freedom. They are experiencing randomness, and randomness produces anxiety, not liberation. A person with a well-designed financial system, clear rules, automatic allocations, pre-decided spending boundaries, might appear constrained, but they are experiencing real freedom. The freedom that comes from knowing exactly where they stand. The freedom to make choices from clarity rather than fear. The freedom to say no to things that don't align without financial panic. The structure is not the cage. The structure is what prevents you from being controlled by circumstances, emotions, and external pressure. This is one of the deepest truths in personal development, not just in finance. The people who appear most free, who have the most options, the most calm, the most genuine choice in how they spend their time and energy, are almost always people operating within self-chosen structures. Musicians with the most creative freedom are the ones who have mastered technical structure. Athletes with the most effective freedom of movement are the ones who have trained specific movement patterns thousands of times. Writers with the most expressive freedom are the ones who have internalized the structures of language so deeply that they can play with them creatively. Financial freedom follows the same pattern. The structure, the system, the rules, the boundaries doesn't limit freedom. It creates the conditions under which freedom becomes possible. Because without structure, you are not free. You are reactive. And reactive living is not freedom. It's controlled chaos, where every circumstance dictates your response and you never quite feel in command of your own life. Cash flow mastery offers the opposite. Proactive living from a position of structural stability. You're not reacting to money. You're directing it. And that direction, sustained over time, produces a life where financial decisions stop controlling you and start serving you. That is the freedom paradox resolved. Structure, chosen well and maintained consistently, is the foundation of every form of genuine freedom worth having. Chapter 27. What happens when the system is solid? The second layer of growth. There comes a point in the cash flow mastery journey where the core system is solid. Savings are building automatically. Debt is decreasing or eliminated. Fixed costs are under control. The emergency buffer exists. Monthly. Reviews happen consistently. The system is running. At that point, a new question naturally emerges. Now what? This is where most financial education stops, as if reaching stability is the end goal. But stability, while essential, is a foundation, not a destination. The second layer of growth is where cash flow mastery becomes genuinely powerful. Once the defensive systems are solid, once you have genuine financial stability and breathing room, you have the margin to build offensively, to deploy resources toward things that grow rather than things that simply protect. This is where investment becomes possible in its truest sense. Not gambling, not speculation, not hoping, but deliberate allocation of resources toward assets that produce returns over time. The specific vehicles matter less than the principle. Once your foundation is solid, every dollar above that foundation has the opportunity to work rather than simply sit. For some people, this means traditional investments, index funds, retirement accounts, dividend-producing stocks. For others, it means business investment, building or buying a small business that generates cash flow beyond salary. For others still, it means skill development, investing in education or training that increases earning potential permanently. The right answer depends entirely on your context, your skills, your interests, and your risk tolerance. But what doesn't depend on any of those factors is the sequence. Foundation first, growth second, never the reverse. The mistake most people make is trying to build the second layer before the first is solid. Investing in opportunities while still living paycheck to paycheck. Starting businesses while carrying significant high-interest debt. Chasing returns while having no emergency fund. That sequence almost always fails. Not because the investment or business was wrong, but because the foundation wasn't there to support it. The first disruption, the first setback, the first unexpected expense collapses the entire structure. Cash flow mastery respects sequence. Stability creates the conditions for intelligent risk-taking. And intelligent risk-taking, from a position of stability, is how modest financial security transforms into genuine wealth over time. But here's what's crucial. Even at this second layer, the principles remain the same. systems over hustle, structure over motivation, long-term process over short-term results. The person who reaches financial stability through disciplined system building and then abandons those principles in pursuit of faster growth almost always regrets it. The principles that built the foundation are the same principles that sustain everything built on top of it. Chapter 28. The Relationship with Money. You've always wanted. Let's talk about something we haven't addressed directly yet. What your relationship with money actually feels like once this transformation is complete. Because that's what this entire journey has been building toward. Not a number, not a net worth milestone, a relationship. Most people live in one of two dysfunctional relationships with money. The first is avoidance. Money is anxiety producing, so it gets avoided. Statements don't get opened. Accounts don't get checked. Decisions don't get made. The financial life just sort of happens, reactive and unmanaged, and the person lives with a constant low-level dread about what might be waiting for them if they looked. The second is obsession. Money dominates thinking. Every decision gets filtered through financial implications. Accounts get checked multiple times daily. Every expense produces guilt or second-guessing. The pursuit of financial security itself becomes a source of insecurity because the goalposts keep moving and nothing ever feels like enough. Cash flow mastery offers a third option, functional partnership. In this relationship, money is a tool, neutral, neither morally good nor bad, not a source of identity or worth, not something to fear or worship, just a tool that, when structured well, supports the life you want to live. In a functional partnership with money, you check in regularly but not obsessively. You know where things stand without needing to monitor constantly. Decisions get made from clarity, not emotion. Financial choices produce neither guilt nor anxiety, just evaluation against your system and values. Unexpected expenses get handled systematically rather than producing crisis. The buffer absorbs them. The system adjusts. Life continues. Financial conversations with partners, family, or yourself happen calmly. Money is a practical topic, not an emotional minefield. You can think long-term without present deprivation. The system supports both today and tomorrow without forcing you to sacrifice one for the other. And perhaps most importantly, money stops interrupting your thoughts. This is the experience most people are actually seeking when they say they want financial freedom, not infinite wealth. Just a life where money has moved from the center of attention to the quiet background, where it works reliably, supports consistently, and demands minimal ongoing cognitive bandwidth. That experience is available to anyone willing to build the structure that produces it. It doesn't require exceptional income. It requires exceptional design. And design is a learnable skill. Chapter 29, The Final Principle, Financial Mastery is Life Mastery. We're nearly done, and I want to end with the most important insight this entire journey has been building toward. Everything we've discussed, the systems, the structures, the mental shifts, these principles extend far beyond finance. The way you handle money is the way you handle everything. If your approach to money is reactive, your approach to problems is probably reactive. If your financial life lacks structure, other areas probably lack structure too. If you struggle with delayed gratification financially, you probably struggle with it elsewhere. And the reverse is equally true. The discipline you build managing money transfers to every other domain that requires discipline. The systems thinking you develop designing cash flow applies to designing career trajectories, relationships, health habits, creative projects, everything that benefits from intention over reaction. This is why cash flow mastery, practiced seriously, becomes a form of life mastery. You're not just learning to handle money better, you're learning to handle yourself better, to make decisions from clarity rather than pressure, to build structures that support long-term goals rather than just managing short-term urgencies, to trust process over feelings, to delay gratification when delay serves you, to choose with intention rather than react with impulse. These are life skills. Money is simply the domain where you're training them. And once trained in one domain, they transfer. The person who has built the discipline to maintain a financial system through years of invisible progress has built the discipline to maintain anything through years of invisible progress. The mental muscle is the same. The context is different. This is why I opened this entire audiobook by telling you it wasn't about getting rich. It's about getting free. And freedom, real freedom, the experienced kind rather than the aspirational kind, comes from internal capacities, not external circumstances. Financial stability creates conditions that make freedom easier. But the capacities you develop building that stability, discipline, patience, long-term thinking, emotional regulation, structural design, those are what produce freedom that lasts regardless of what happens externally. Money is the training ground. Life is what you're training for. And if you've stayed with me this far, if you've genuinely engaged with these ideas rather than just passively consuming them, you've already started that training. The awareness itself has changed how you see money. And seeing differently is the first step toward acting differently. Conclusion. The system is yours now. We've covered extraordinary ground together. From the fundamental recognition that the game most people are playing, salary thinking, paycheck dependence, reactive financial life, is the wrong game entirely. Through the core principles of cash flow mastery, that money needs direction before it arrives. That structure reduces the need for discipline. That systems outlast motivation. That small consistent actions compound into transformative outcomes over time. Into the practical implementation. Tracking to create visibility. Automatic allocation to remove decision fatigue. Buffers to absorb chaos. Maintenance schedules to keep systems aligned. And finally, into the deeper layers. The psychology of spending. The identity work that protects systems. The long-term thinking required to stay the course. The relationship with money that produces genuine calm. If you remember nothing else from this audiobook, remember this. A salary tells you what you earn. A system determines what you keep, what you build, and what eventually sets you free. The work ahead of you is not complicated. It is simple, unsexy, consistent, boring even. But boring, maintained over years, produces extraordinary results. You will have hard weeks. You will have months where motivation disappears. You will face unexpected expenses, life disruptions, and moments where maintaining your system feels pointless because results aren't yet visible. In those moments, return to this. Trust process over feelings. Measure success by whether the system ran as designed, not by whether you feel rich yet. Give compounding the time it requires to work, because it will work, not instantly, not dramatically, but reliably, progressively, cumulatively. If you don't abandon it, the system is yours now, not mine, not something external that you're trying to follow, yours, built by you for your specific life, maintained by your commitment to future you. And future you, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, will have one of two experiences. Either they'll be in the same place they are today, wondering why things never changed, despite years of effort, or they'll be living inside the compounded results of a system that ran faithfully month after month, regardless of how they felt. That choice is made today and tomorrow and the day after that, not once dramatically, but repeatedly, quietly, in small decisions that either honor the system or erode it. This is the work, and it is entirely available to you. If this material has shifted how you think about money, even slightly, consider that shift a vote for a new identity. The identity of someone who designs rather than reacts, who builds rather than just copes, who thinks in systems rather than salaries. And if you want to mark this moment, to make a commitment to yourself that you'll actually implement what you've learned rather than letting it fade into the background noise of good intentions, do something simple. Write down one structural change you'll make this week. Not 10. 1. 1 automatic transfer. 1 spending category you'll track. Honestly, 1 debt payment you'll prioritize. 1 buffer account you'll open. 1 small structural change that signals, I am building something here. And then do it. Not perfectly. Just actually, because the gap between understanding and implementation is where most transformation dies. Don't let yours die there. You've invested hours in this material. Honor that investment by taking one real action before this week ends. The system is waiting, and future you is counting on present you to start building it. A final word, financial freedom. Is not a number. It's not a net worth milestone or an income threshold or a portfolio balance. Financial freedom is a nervous system that doesn't spike when bills arrive. It's a mind that can think long term because short term survival is handled. It's a life where money serves rather than dominates. It's the ability to make choices from preference rather than desperation. That experience is available to anyone willing to build the structure that produces it, not quickly, not easily, but reliably, for those who stay the course. The course starts now, and the system you build in the next 3 years will determine the experience of every year that follows. Make it count.
Lipurane ngeno wapogwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM. the eye.
What if the key to mastering any challenge isn't about pushing harder, but about thinking sharper? In this audiobook, you'll discover the powerful strategies top thinkers use to anticipate change, make smarter decisions, and achieve lasting success. Unlock your potential to outthink obstacles, act with precision, and take confident control of your life's direction. Introduction. Why strategic thinking is your greatest superpower? Let me ask you a simple question. When life throws you a curveball, do you react or do you respond strategically? In a world that constantly demands your attention, that pressures you to move fast, to speak up, to take action, how often do you pause and ask, "What's the smartest move I can make right now?" That pause, that brief moment of intentional thought, is the birthplace of power. It's where ordinary people become extraordinary. It's where you stop playing checkers and start playing chess. This, right here, is what strategic thinking is all about. And let me tell you, it's your greatest superpower. The split second that changes everything. Most people live on autopilot. They get up, scroll through their phones, react to the day, respond to emails, run errands, and try to catch their breath in between. When problems arise, they respond with urgency, not clarity. Emotions take the wheel. Panic, frustration, fear. These feelings drive decision after decision. But strategic thinkers? They play a different game. They pause. They observe. They plan. They don't just think about what's happening right now. They consider what happens 5 steps from now. They ask questions like, what's the long game here? How does this fit into the bigger picture? What's the ripple effect of this choice? This mindset is the reason some people seem to navigate chaos with calm, pivot under pressure, and create breakthrough results while others are constantly putting out fires. Strategic thinking isn't just for military generals, CEOs, or political masterminds. It's for you, right now. No matter your background, title, or goals, you have access to this tool. The only thing you need to do is learn how to use it, and that's exactly what this audiobook will teach you. What is strategic thinking? Really? Let's clear something up. Strategic thinking is not about being manipulative, rigid, or cold. It's not about plotting endlessly or outwitting everyone in your life. It's not some elite skill reserved for boardrooms and war rooms. Strategic thinking is a way of approaching problems and opportunities with clarity, foresight, and intelligence. It means being intentional instead of reactive. It means thinking. Before you act, choosing your battles, and anticipating consequences. It's about seeing patterns, understanding systems, and knowing which levers to pull to make the biggest impact. It's also deeply personal. Strategic thinking can help you decide how to respond when your partner is upset with you. It can guide you through career changes, difficult conversations, parenting dilemmas, business challenges, and financial uncertainty. It gives you control where others feel chaos. It gives you choice where others feel cornered. Think of it as your internal GPS. You input your destination, assess your starting point, scan the possible routes, avoid the roadblocks, and then move forward, calmly and confidently. Why strategic thinking matters more than ever. We live in the age of information overload and constant distraction. The speed of the world is increasing, but strategic thinking teaches you to slow down your mind, even when everything around you is speeding up. It's the difference between being swept away by a storm and learning to navigate it like a skilled sailor. Strategic thinking helps you make better decisions faster, reduces stress and emotional reactivity, clarifies your goals and priorities, gives you an edge in work, relationships, and daily life, builds confidence through clarity. Let me give you an example. Imagine two people lose their job unexpectedly. Person A panics. They send out hundreds of resumes, take the first job that responds, and spend the next year feeling stuck, underpaid and burned out. Why? Because they reacted. Person B, on the other hand, takes a day to process the shock, then steps back and thinks. They assess their finances, consider their long-term goals, reach out to mentors, and only apply to positions that align with their values and skills. Within months, they land a role that not only pays better, but also fuels their passion. Same event. Two wildly different outcomes. The difference? One person reacted. The other one strategized. Strategic thinking and success. Two sides of the same coin. Look at the most successful people in any field. Entrepreneurs, athletes, artists, or leaders. What do they all have in common? Yes, they work hard. Yes, they're disciplined. But above all else, they are strategic. They don't just show up and hope for the best. They plan. They pivot. They calculate risk. They know when to say yes, and more importantly, they know when to say no. They know how to think several moves ahead, anticipate obstacles, and stay focused on the goal, even when things get messy. Strategic thinking allows you to control the controllables, manage uncertainty, and maximize opportunity. And here's the secret. It's not about having perfect plans. It's about developing the skill to adjust intelligently as things change. The best strategists aren't rigid. They're adaptable, resilient, and clear on what matters most. That's what this audiobook is going to teach you. Not just how to plan better, but how to think better. To lead yourself wisely. To outsmart any challenge life throws at you. What's ahead? A quick preview of the journey. Here's how we're going to break it down. In Chapter 1, we'll explore the foundations of a strategic mindset. What it takes to stop reacting emotionally and start thinking long-term. In Chapter 2, we'll talk about clarity, how to define what you really want, and reverse engineer the path to get there. In Chapter 3, we'll focus on information, how to gather what you need without getting stuck in analysis paralysis. Chapter 4 will teach you how to see the big picture, spot hidden connections, and understand complex situations more deeply. In Chapter 5, we'll unlock the power of anticipation, learning how to plan for the future while navigating the present. Chapter 6 is all about timing, when to act, when to wait, and how to move with precision. Chapter 7 dives into the concept of leverage, how to get bigger results with less effort by using your resources wisely. Chapter 8 will help you stay agile, adapting to change without losing your vision. Chapter 9 explores the psychological side of strategy, how to understand people, build influence, and communicate with impact. And finally, in Chapter 10, we'll bring it all together with execution, how to turn strategy into real-world action and success. Each chapter will include examples, practical tools, and mindset shifts to help you think more clearly, lead more effectively, and solve problems like a strategist. By the time we're done, you won't just understand strategic thinking, you'll live it. You'll move through life with more purpose, power, and poise. You'll stop getting stuck in the noise and start creating outcomes that matter to you. Final thought. You already have what it takes. You don't need to be a genius to think strategically. You don't need a fancy degree or high IQ. All you need is the willingness to slow down, think clearly, and act with purpose. That's it. You already have the raw material. This book is just the blueprint, and I'll be right here with you every step of the way. So take a deep breath. Get ready to shift gears, because you're about to learn how to outsmart any challenge, not by chance, but by choice. Let's begin. Chapter 1. The Strategic Mindset. How to think before you react. Let's begin with a truth most people overlook. Your greatest power isn't your knowledge, your talent, or even your experience. Your greatest power is the ability to choose. How you think. Because in the end, it's not the smartest, fastest, or strongest people who win. It's the ones who can pause, evaluate, and think clearly under pressure. That's the essence of a strategic mindset. What strategic thinking really means. When people hear the word strategy, They often imagine military generals huddled over maps, business tycoons calculating profits, or chess masters plotting their next moves. And yes, those are examples. But strategic thinking is not limited to high-stakes war rooms or executive board meetings. Strategic thinking is a mindset, a way of approaching decisions, challenges, and opportunities with purpose and perspective. It means asking yourself, what outcome do I want? What's the smartest path to get there? What are the potential obstacles, and how can I prepare for them? What are my resources, and how can I use them wisely? Strategic thinkers don't act just because something feels urgent. They act when it makes sense. They weigh possibilities, think in terms of consequences, and focus on positioning themselves for success, not just for now, but for the long haul. Here's the difference in action. A reactive mind says, I'm mad, so I'll say something right now. A strategic mind says, I'm mad, so I'll cool off and figure out how to address this in a way that actually solves the problem. A reactive mind panics when things go wrong. A strategic mind steps back, reassesses, and looks for options. Reactive mind wants quick fixes. A strategic mind wants long-term results. This isn't about being slow or indecisive. It's about being deliberate. It's about owning your response instead of being controlled by emotions, pressure, or fear. Why most people react? Instead of think, let's be honest. Reacting is easy. It feels natural. You get triggered, and you respond. Something surprises you, and you immediately do or say something. That's how we're wired. Fight or flight, survival instincts, instant reactions. But we're not living in the wilderness anymore. We live in a world where most challenges require thinking, not instinct. And that's where many people fall behind. They send angry emails, make impulsive purchases, lash out in relationships, quit things too soon, or hold on too long because they're stuck in reaction mode. It's not their fault entirely. Society celebrates speed. Move fast. Act now. Don't think. Just do. But think about this. You don't need more speed. You need more direction. That's what strategic thinking gives you. Direction. Strategic thinkers pause. They reflect. They train themselves to think before they act, to plan before they speak, to see consequences before they unfold. And that pause, that simple pause, is where your power lives. Replacing emotional reactions with calm analysis. Let's talk about emotions, because we all have them. And let's be clear, emotions are not the enemy. They're signals. They give you valuable information about how you feel, but they're not always the best decision makers. Imagine this. You're driving, and someone cuts you off. Your heart races. You want to honk, shout, or speed up. But if you pause, even for a second, and think strategically, you realize, this moment doesn't deserve your energy. Now apply that to bigger moments. An argument with a loved one, a setback at work, a financial crisis, a health scare. Your first emotional reaction might be fear, anger, or hopelessness. But if you've trained your mind, you can acknowledge those feelings without acting on them. Here's a practical tool. The 3-second rule. Before you respond, pause for 3 seconds and ask, what outcome do I want? Is this reaction helping or hurting that outcome? What would a strategic version of me do next? These 3 seconds can save relationships, preserve your energy, and completely change the course of a situation. The goal is not to suppress your emotions. It's to manage them with wisdom. Think of your emotions like weather. You can't control the storm, but you can choose how you dress for it, how you move through it, and whether you run blindly or walk with intention. Calm analysis means stepping outside the storm and asking, what's really going on here? What are my options? This simple shift from emotion to evaluation turns chaos into clarity. Developing mental discipline and long-term thinking. Now, here's the part most people avoid, discipline. Because strategic thinking isn't just about what you do in the moment. It's about how you train your mind over time. Mental discipline means practicing the ability to delay gratification, resist impulsive urges. Think beyond this hour, this day, this week. Ask yourself, where do I want to be 6 months from now? What would the version of me a year from now thank me for doing today? What habits, thoughts, or people are pulling me off course? Most people make decisions based on how they feel right now. Strategic thinkers make decisions based on where they want to be later. That's not always fun. It takes restraint. But it pays off every time. Here's another mental tool. The future you test. Before you make a decision, imagine your future self watching you. Would they applaud your choice? Or cringe at the consequences? This habit trains you to zoom out and see the bigger picture. And when you can zoom out, you gain perspective. You stop sweating small stuff. You stop chasing instant wins that sabotage long-term goals. Let me give you a real-world example. Say you're offered a new job. It pays well, but the hours are brutal and the environment is toxic. A reactive mind might say, I need money. Say, yes. A strategic mind says, yes, money is important. But what will this cost me long term? My health? My peace of mind? My time with family? That pause could lead you to negotiate better terms, find a smarter option, or prepare a transition. Plan. In short, it gives you power. Strategic power. Training your mind to think strategically. Every day. Now you might be wondering, can this be learned, or are some people just born with it? Let me reassure you, strategic thinking is 100% learnable. But like any skill, it needs practice. Repetition, intentionality. Here are a few ways to train your strategic mind daily. Ask better questions. Every time you face a challenge, ask, what's the real issue here? What would success look like? What's the smartest next step? Strategic thinkers don't obsess over problems. They obsess over clarity. Journal your decisions. Take 5 minutes at the end of your day to reflect. What choices did I make today? Did I act strategically or react emotionally? What will I do differently tomorrow? This builds awareness and consistency over time. Play mental chess. When you're in a tough spot, don't just focus on the first move. Think 2, 3, even 4 moves ahead. Ask, if I do this, what happens next? Just like chess, life rewards those who can anticipate, not just respond. Surround yourself with strategists. Your environment matters. Spend time around people who think long-term, who make thoughtful choices, who value growth over gossip. Their habits will rub off on you. Final thoughts. From reactive to strategic. Your new identity. You were not born to live on autopilot. You were built to lead. To make powerful, intelligent, and thoughtful decisions. Every single challenge in your life becomes more manageable when you switch from a reactive mindset to a strategic one. This isn't just a skill. It's an identity shift. You're no longer the person who panics, overreacts, or spirals. You're the person who pauses, evaluates, and plays the long game. So today, start claiming that identity. Practice the pause. Ask the smarter question. Choose the next move, not the next impulse. Because the truth is, your mind is your most powerful weapon, and once you learn to master it, there's no challenge you can't outsmart. Chapter 2. Clarity is power. Defining your endgame. Let me ask you a question, one that sounds simple but reveals everything. What do you really want? Most people can't answer that with any real precision. They'll say things like, I want to be successful. I want to be happy. Or, I want to make more money. But that's vague. It's not a strategy. It's a wish. Strategic thinking begins with clarity. Because if you don't know exactly what you're aiming for, you can't build a smart plan to get there. And if you don't have a clear destination, every detour starts to look like an opportunity. So here's the truth. Clarity is your greatest leverage. Why vague goals create real problems? Imagine getting into your car and driving without a destination. You could burn gas for hours, turn in circles, end up lost, or worse, nowhere. But that's exactly how most people live their lives. They wake up and react to whatever is urgent. They chase random opportunities. They copy what others are doing. But they never stop to ask, is this actually moving me closer to what I truly want? You see, without clarity, you say yes to distractions. You waste time on goals that aren't yours. You confuse activity with progress. That's the hidden danger of being busy. You can stay in motion without moving forward. But clarity fixes that. When you know your end game, every decision becomes easier. You stop reacting. You start aligning. You stop second-guessing. You start moving with purpose. Step 1. Understanding your true goals. So let's start here. What is your true goal? Not what your parents wanted. Not what society told you. Not what sounds cool or trendy. What do you want? To answer this, go deeper than surface-level answers. Here are some questions to guide you. What does success look like in my eyes? Not anyone else's. What kind of lifestyle do I want to live? What impact do I want to have on others? What do I want to be known for? When I look back 10 years from now, what will I regret not doing? You're not just chasing a career, a relationship, or a title. You're chasing a feeling, a life, a legacy. The more specific you get, the more powerful your vision becomes. Specificity fuels strategy. Instead of saying, I want to be successful, say, I want to build a business that gives me freedom and helps people. I want to be debt-free and invest $100,000 by age 40. I want to work 4 days a week and spend Fridays with my family. That's real clarity, and real clarity leads to real action. Step 2. Reverse engineering success. Once you've defined your goal, don't just admire it. Reverse engineer it. Strategic thinkers don't just dream forward. They plan backward. They look at the end result and ask, what would have to happen for this to be true? Let's say your end game is to become a published author. Start by imagining the moment you're holding your book. Now ask, what's the step right before this? Maybe it's getting a publishing deal. Before that, finishing your manuscript. Before that, writing the chapters. Before that, outlining your book. Before that, carving out time every week to write. Suddenly your goal isn't just a fantasy. It's a series of clear, manageable steps. This is called reverse engineering, and it's the fastest way to turn a dream into a strategy. Here's another example. Say your goal is financial independence in the next 10 years. Ask yourself, what does financial independence mean to me? How much money? What kind of lifestyle? How much do I need to earn, save, and invest each year? What skills or opportunities would make that possible? What can I start doing this month to move in that direction? You break the big goal into small, trackable milestones. And those milestones, they become your roadmap. Most people don't fail because they're lazy. They fail because they don't know the steps. Strategic thinkers map the steps in reverse. Step 3. Setting outcome-driven priorities. Now let's bring it all together. Clarity without action is just noise. That's why strategic thinkers don't just ask, what should I do? They ask, what matters most right now based on where I want to go? That's the secret to outcome-driven priorities. Not all tasks are created equal. Some things feel urgent, but they don't really matter. Other things don't feel urgent, but they're massively important. Strategic thinkers prioritize based on impact, not impulse. Let's say your goal is to launch a side business in 6 months. You could scroll through branding ideas for hours, watch YouTube videos on logo design, or spend that time building your first product, reaching out to potential clients, or validating your idea. Which one moves you forward fastest? Every day ask yourself, is this task directly aligned with my end game? Will this get me closer to my goal, or just keep me busy? Here's a tool. The Power Priority Filter. Write down your top 3 goals. Then write your weekly to-do list. For every task, ask, does this directly support one of my top 3 goals? If not, Eliminate, delegate, or delay it. This one habit will save you hundreds of hours over the next year. It also gives you a powerful word. No. Because once you know your destination, you're allowed, no, required, to say no to the things that don't help you get there. Remember, saying no to good things is how you say yes to great ones. Bonus: the one-sentence strategy. Here's a powerful exercise. Define your entire strategy in one sentence. For example, I'm building a coaching business to replace my 9-to-5 income in 12 months. I'm prioritizing health and strength so I can live 20 more high-quality years. I'm creating digital products to earn passive income and buy back my time. This forces clarity. If you can't explain your strategy in one sentence, you're not clear yet. Write it. Read it daily. Let it guide your choices. Final thoughts. Don't just move, move with meaning. Let's wrap up with this truth. Movement isn't progress. Clarity turns motion into momentum. You're not here to stay busy. You're here to build something that matters, to live on purpose, not on autopilot. To lead your life instead of reacting to it. Strategic thinking isn't about being perfect. It's about being precise. So starting today, define what you truly want, not what others expect. Reverse engineer that goal into simple daily actions. Ruthlessly prioritize what matters most. Because once you're clear on the what, and the why the how becomes a lot less mysterious, you're not just dreaming anymore, you're designing. Chapter 3. Information is ammunition. Learn before you move. Imagine you're walking onto a battlefield. You can't see the terrain. You don't know where the enemy is hiding. You have no idea what weapons are available. Now tell me, would you charge forward? Of course not. Yet that's how most people approach life, business, relationships, even their health. They act without insight. They move before learning. They confuse movement with mastery. But you? You're learning to think strategically. And one of the golden rules of strategic thinking is this. Information is ammunition. Learn before you move. If clarity is power, then information is precision. It allows you to see clearly, aim accurately, and execute with confidence. It gives you an edge most people will never have because most people don't take the time to learn before they act. Let's unpack this essential habit and show you how to turn knowledge into action without falling into the trap of overthinking. The Viadu smart strategist gathers before they go. Every master of strategy, from Sun Tzu to modern-day CEOs, shares a common belief. Knowledge is power, but only if it's the right knowledge. The goal isn't to know everything. It's to know enough of the right things to make a smart move. Let's say you're launching a business. What information do you actually need? Who are your customers? What do they already buy? What do they complain about? What's missing in the market? What are your competitors doing? And more importantly, not doing. You don't need an MBA to gather this. You just need curiosity and discipline. Here's the shift. Stop guessing. Start discovering. Make research part of your strategy. Not as a stall tactic, but as your launch pad. The best strategic moves are almost invisible. They look effortless. But behind them is always one thing. Insight. How to gather relevant, timely information. Let's make this practical. There are three filters. You want to apply to your research: relevance, timeliness, and credibility. Relevance. Does this information actually help me make a decision or solve a problem I have right now? Avoid going down rabbit holes just to feel smart. Timeliness. Is this recent? The world changes fast. Don't base your strategy on 5-year-old advice. Credibility. Who is giving this information? Are they proven, experienced, or just loud? Remember, the internet is full of noise. Your job is to find the signal. Once you have a few trustworthy sources, go wide first, then go deep. Let's say you want to improve your personal finances. Don't just buy the first course or follow a random influencer. Read foundational books. Compare perspectives. Look at data. Talk to people who've done what you want to do. And here's the key. Don't stop with surface-level facts. Ask yourself, what's the implication of this? What's the context? How does this apply to my specific situation? Strategic thinkers never stop at what happened. They ask, why did it happen, and what can I learn from it? Avoiding the trap of overthinking or underpreparing. Now let's talk about the danger zones. Paralysis by analysis and reckless execution. Strategic thinking is about balance. Some people research endlessly. They gather more and more information, hoping for the perfect answer. But perfection is a myth. You'll never feel 100% ready. Other people act impulsively. They don't plan, they don't check. They just move and crash. Both extremes are dangerous. Here's a better approach. Learn just enough to understand the landscape. Identify your knowledge gaps. Fill the most important ones. Move forward with a strong but flexible plan. Think of it like this. Don't build a house without a blueprint. But also, don't keep redrawing the blueprint forever.
Because if you keep drawing the blueprint forever, Chomi, then you're going to mess up the original idea, and it is what it is. So move with a strategy, ladies and gentlemen. So that was all from the Reading Corner here on Pulling Heartstrings. I hope you have enjoyed our program this evening, and I bid you guys farewell. I love you forever and a day. You are important to me, and stay tuned to Eagle FM as we proceed to give you what you need. What's up?